So, and I guess I was thinking, if you're going to put stuff out, even at the very beginning, when you create a piece of work, an art, you've created something. Are you protected before you actually get a copyright on it? So, in other words, would you ever put something out that isn't copyrighted if you were interested in protecting it?
You technically own the copyright the moment that you create it. If in the moment that you are able to put it down on a piece of sheet music, or to put it down onto a sketch pad, or onto a post-it note, it's technically yours and you own it. You register.
The copyright is proof that you were the one that came up with it at a certain point in time.
It's a registration. It doesn't work. It won't work. No. That's the poor man's copyright, and and it doesn't hurt necessarily to have that, but it doesn't.
But you still
in
a legal battle too.
Registering.
Yeah.
The way that it works is like this: if you are the person who registered a copyright, and somebody finds fault with your work in saying that you stole that from them, and you're the person that filed the copyright, they have to prove you stole it or used it in some malicious way. And if they own the copyright, then the law looks at them as having more weight. Like you would then have to prove that you actually were the original author, you know, in court, and that you used it before they copyrighted it. It would be like getting a copyright is like getting a vaccination. You know, it's like getting a vaccination. You know, it's that time of year again, folks, where we're all about to have our material stolen from us. So let's all get copywritten so we can avoid this.
So do you ever put uncopyrighted work out there?
You can, and it's not necessarily.
Do you?
I mean,
yeah.
I think that we start to get a little bit more comfortable at the longer that we put out material. Like, I think that your first adventure in putting out material, and like, well, what's going to happen to this, and what if somebody steals it? But there's also like these idea processes that we go through where we want to be able to release something that's kind of raw, and kind of unfiltered, if you will. So we don't. We just want to get it out there because it's new and fresh and we're really excited about it. But if what happens is we've designed something and then we put it on the internet, and then there's a post that's created that can show a time and a date stamp, you know, so we have some evidence. It went right from our thoughts right onto a website with a publication date. You know, there are ways to trace it out.
So if you have a digital file or something, timestamp, you can
technically when you fill out a copyright form, there's a spot that asks if you've already published it, which essentially means have you made it public yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can copyright something after having made it public and just say this is the date and where I made it public at, and so then it's kind of a reference to something that you've already released publicly that now you're copywriting, and you can show evidence of when you originally released it.
Okay. Does that happen to you, Jim? I mean, does it work differently in the graphic arts?
I feel like it's a lot more difficult to nail down copyrights for something like an ongoing comic, because to really have it copywritten, I would have to do every single page as it's coming out. But there are other ways that are more general, like copywriting the characters, the design specifically for them, things like that. But
that is
something that you could you could copyright that.
A catchphrase?
Catchphrase, a slogan. Sure. Businesses do it all the time. I don't know what what can Brown do for you? That's a slogan. That's UPS. They own that. If one of us wanted to use it, we couldn't use it.
We'd have to
pay a fee to be able to, just to be able to use it. What's some other ones?
Just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
It's gotta be one of the most famous ones ever.
It's not. You can't. Good luck trying to sell a sports shoe from any brand with the slogan "Just Do It," without Nike sending you a cease and desist order, it's not going to happen.
Can we make a song with that?
Well,
that could be under, you know, let's see, what's the word? Like satire or reference. If you're referring to something that's very well known like that, it's not the same as taking it, but there's a line of difference. Yeah. Like there's a tonal difference. It has to be something provable that you're not just taking it.
I mean, you can mention somebody's name, right, in songs, and you don't have to pay them for that, I don't think. It's very strange what
lying
you can
in bed like
do.
Brian Wilson did.
Right. Yeah, like Brian Wilson's not getting a check or anything. Like, I mean, like but rappers, I mean, talk trash on each other, like, all the time.
There's a songwriter that I know that's in Cheltenham, actually, and he likes to quote other musicians in a song, or so he might say something like, you know, when they said... I work 8 days a week. And so that's an obvious Beatles reference, but the Beatles don't own the phrase 8 days a week. Like, we're allowed to still do that. Just like we can say, just do it. And if we're kind of referring to that company, there's that association there, you know, or if we make that phrase kind of like, we're not going to just outright rewrite the chorus of our song to say, you know, 8 days a week, but we can refer to 8 days a week as a totally separate entity. It's like we want you to be in this frame of mind, you know, or understand that this song has a relationship to this other song, but it's not actual, you know, lyric stealing or whatever.
Well, when you get right down to it, it's like angels dancing on the head of a pin.
Or demons.
That whole Fonz George Harrison thing, I'm sure they did the details the way they should have, but I also think it probably kept the lawyers happy for years.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, so how much does it cost to copyright 10 songs or a character? And then
I think he's the pro on this one.
But yeah. And then the backside of that is, is it worth it if you're not going to hire a lawyer to protect yourself anyway? Because can you really afford then to hire the lawyer to protect yourself?
I'll be honest with you right now. If anybody would like to sue me, I will take you to court, and I will make the biggest public display I possibly can of it because it's good marketing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay? So I will, what I save in marketing costs, I will spend on a lawyer, okay?
If someone's stealing your stuff, that means it's desirable,
Jeff,
tell all the
right?
papers.
I need a spin, yeah.
So how much does it cost to copyright 10 songs?
Realistically, like, what she was saying is true for a musician as well. If, as I'm writing, I sent in one copyright at a time, I think digitally right now I can do a copyright for $25 an item. But I can also send in an entire record when it's done,
right,
and copyright it as what the copyright office would consider a compilation, if you will, or like a group of audio recordings that I'm claiming copyright registration of. And so then I can register all 10 songs for $25. Mm-hmm. And technically, if Joan wanted to take a year's worth of her weekly online webcomic, she could put them into one-page digital PDF forms, and at the end of every year, she could file a registration that says this is a compilation of work that I've done, and she could register, you know, a year's worth of online webcomics for $25.
Okay.
There might be some limitations there. I don't know, depending on the upload forms and formats and stuff like that.
So that's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it. And when you start looking at the cost of sending yourself a CD, so now you've had a CD made, right? Then you're going to spend, what, $5 on postage? I mean, you're only saving yourself like $20.
And plus, like you said, doing it the right way. I mean, nobody wants to have to deal with it in a legal battle anyway. But
right,
if you do it the right way, then you know you're covered, and
you have one less step of hassle later on.
And you have
a
leg up on whoever's,
right,
you know
actually,
coming after you. Yeah.
When I was young and good looking.
Well, you're one of those. You're still one of those.
We were going to do some recording, and I had some rough tracks that, you know, I did on a four track. And I just said, you know, before I go into the
studio, let me just go down to the Library of Congress, take this tape, pull it out here. $25, like I said.
Right.
Six songs that just a rough track with some melody on it, no vocals, just
right.
Rhythm track. We go in there, this guy was sponsoring the project, did it, and then he comes back with a contract that was really prohibited. Nobody
right.
just choked on it. He's like, well, you may as well sign it because I put a copyright on the master. And I said, well, you know, I have a copyright and I use this tape. And did it like 3 months ago. And he took it and took it to his lawyers and they started calling me. And
right.
I never returned the call and the project died.
Right.
But the point is, it was protection. We weren't
right.
exploited. We didn't get anywhere with it.
Right.
Some demos, basically, we just mass produced the tape and used the demo.
Sure.
We protected ourselves just off of what I did. So,
right.
I mean, it's a layer of protection, the way I look at it. Just keeps them honest.
Right.
You know, and of course, that was back in the Jurassic. I don't know how things are now.
They haven't changed a whole bunch, other than maybe there's less people that are out to screw other people over because everything becomes so public. I mean, I think that most of the artists want to try to approach any of their projects with the artistic integrity, and then we've started to gravitate towards working with people that we know honor our own personal mission goals.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's enough, we were talking about like home studios and stuff like that, there's enough now where you get a professional recording out of a loft in a barn somewhere, you know. And, there's basement studios that, you know, and there's actually a lot of major producers who work almost exclusively out of their basement, you know, because 80% of the year they're going to be working out of projects in their basement. And if they need to go into a big studio, then they'll rent the studio time to take an artist in there. But I think a lot of it is like if whether it was a major Hollywood producer or just some guy in a fancy studio in Upper Marlboro, it's like the second that somebody does you wrong, it's out there on Facebook. And if there's something that we can see from the internet, it's that, the harsher things are, like the more it gets spread around. So the worst that people do you, the more traction something like that is going to get on online, more shares and more
yeah.
press, more coverage.
Yeah, people like defending the little guy.
Yep.
If you're obviously a person that's getting stuff stolen from, a lot of people will rush to your defense simply based on the fact that they would never want it to happen to them. Like, there's a lot of stories of there's a comic book legal defense fund,
mm-hmm.
which basically is a group of people that you can donate a small amount of money to become a member, and they have a team of lawyers that defend small artists that have those sort of cases.
Right.
And if something of yours becomes a case of the comic book legal defense fund, that's also a giant audience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, no matter which way the final say falls, you're still going to be seen more.
Right. Still good marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it sucks to go through, but it could be a positive.
Right. Not because I want to fight, because Lord knows I don't want anything to have to do with fighting anybody. But I mean, honestly, it's also, I can tell you from experience, like, there are songs that were written in Joan's apartment, like at a party, what, 8 years ago, that she knows she heard it for the first time, like before it ever made it to like a phone
recording
or a record somewhere. So yeah, there's going to be some backing up, you know, and stuff like that. And I it wouldn't be that difficult necessarily to prove that it's your own content. But the copyright is there. It's not that expensive. And like you said, I look at it as conducting good business, you know, a $25 investment once a year to kind of cover a blanket of my songs, you know, is not a bad investment. And if nobody buys it, I'm out the cost of 5 cups of Starbucks coffee. So, I mean,
maybe less.
Maybe, well, yeah, less. Less
if
than
if it's Starbucks, you know.
Adding shots.
Yeah.
So the cost of copyright isn't that bad, but what we were talking about originally was whether or not just because you put it on the internet, if somebody should be allowed to use it. And what Jones said is still the case, and I'm sure you feel this way, like, you're hoping to make some money. But if somebody was just like, hey, I'm gonna take like three words that you used in one of your songs, and I'm gonna make a compilation with 15 other artists, and I'm gonna put a mashup together of you and these 15 other artists, do you mind if I use, you know, this snippet from your track? You're gonna be like, yeah, sure, man. Like,
right.
I mean,
but it's weird too. Like, for instance, some friends of mine, their song ran for a long time on, I think it was CBS, every time they would do football,
right,
like go to commercials and stuff, and they made some good money. And you know what? They were just a local band, and they might, you know, if somebody called them and said, can we use this for free for you to be on national television, they probably would have said yes. But quite frankly, these people have the money, they should be paying for it.
Right.
So like, and they did, and they got great checks for it. Like, right. I think they were all in ASCAP, and they would get great checks all the time.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't, I mean, the little guy shouldn't get taken advantage of. And also, right. when they do that, it's not like they put in the bottom corner, like, this is,
yeah,
you know,
they're not,
I don't remember what their band name was at the time. But
yeah, they just
it's not like they got fans out of it.
You become, you know, familiar, I mean, with it because you continue to hear it, not because,
right.
somebody's like, and today's opening track is brought to you,
right.
by so-and-so.
You know
what,
if they're
Baltimore.
Willing to do that, then yeah.
Right.
You know what, use it for free because we'll probably sell a bunch of albums. But
NPR recently used one of our songs as part of their Homegrown series where they're playing our music in between shows.
That's cool.
So like, they'll do it as part of a fade in and a fade out, and they don't announce it at the time that they're playing it, but occasionally they have this you know, this speech that'll go out, it's 30 seconds of, and today, and the music that you heard today was, you know, by so and so and so and so. But it's only going to happen like once every 2 hours or something. I don't, but I submitted my music to that. Okay, and when I submitted my music, I checked off a box that said that I acknowledge that I'm not going to get paid for this. I'm not going to be receiving royalties from this. And I also knew exactly what they were going to do with my music when I submitted the form.
But that's good advertising.
Exactly.
That's free advertising,
right.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah.
But that's
right.
why I chose
that's the weighing of
to
it, yeah.
do it. But as the
yeah.
copyright owner, it's my choice.
Yeah.
Now, if NPR had just said, you know what, we're going to do this, and you know, if you have a problem with it, then sue us.
Right.
Then I might, because it would be fun, because the
because it would be fun.
Because the
big name.
Because the press that I could get out of fighting NPR because they outright stole my stuff would be, you know, legitimate. It'd be worthwhile.
Which brings up the Jeep commercial.
The Jeep commercial. Gosh, is that current? I don't watch TV, but...
the ex-ambassadors.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And so...
Oh, I've seen that, yeah. Yeah.
What happened? But what happened? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The ex-ambassadors. And so it was like the third CD before they ever put that on a record.
Oh, it was just in the commercial. I didn't know that.
And everybody started calling Jeep about, who are these guys? What is this tune?
Right.
And it was a good tune.
Right.
I do wonder about that, too, because some commercials, they will say who it is. Like, it'll just be a little...
Some do.
And I wonder if that's part of the deal. Like, maybe they don't pay as much, I guess.
If
I was the band, I'd say do it, yeah, but...
Yeah.
Well, now that brings up the whole, like, a whole other side where it's like, if you've got Jeep, say, working with Shazam, working with an artist, and so if Jeep is trying to sell you a Jeep, and then there's music playing that the artist is being compensated for in some degree, and then they're also getting a partnership with Shazam, and so Shazam's got it saying, like, if you want to find out more about this track or this artist, you know, then open the app now. And then so right there in front
That's
of your
cool.
TV, you can pull up Shazam, and it'll tell you the artist and the song and where you can buy it. And, like, these are, whatever those dealings are, I mean, it's any combination. It's any combination of promotion versus I'm going to get paid this much. You know, like, everything is negotiable. There are, like we talked about, everybody wants to be Aerosmith. So if Aerosmith's brand new song was about to be in a movie about a meteor coming to Earth, okay, then, and there was this massive Hollywood budget for paying Aerosmith, you know, $1.3 million for this song, or to give them, you know, 2 points on every soundtrack sold, or whatever the case might be. All of that stuff is negotiable. But if instead of it being a Hollywood film, if it was a Sundance Film Independent Festival, and the director of the movie had, you know, a $10,000 budget and approached Aerosmith, Aerosmith may very well be like, well, we want $500, and we want to have, you know, 20% of any soundtrack sales. And that's what that's your ability as a copyright owner. If you are not owning your copyrights, if you don't register your copyrights, if you can't prove it, especially if you want to take it into some sort of commercial work, or if you're going to release it publicly, or if you're going to publish a book, like when the book is done, you copyright it, and then and then you release it, and then you try to see where you can get out your book deals, or a chance to get a paragraph that becomes read aloud as part of a scene on a TV show. I mean, there's That's kind of where I think this conversation is trying to lead, is like, there's so many creative outlets. Mm-hmm. There's so many of us with a diverse portfolio of things that we have to offer. It's easy for us to get painted into a box of, you do this, or this is what you're famous for, and how come you don't play Hotel California anymore? Like, or, you know, I saw the Allman Brothers live 3 times, and not once in those 3 shows did they play Whipping Post. Now, I was bummed, because I love Whipping Post, and I would have loved to have heard a live 9, 12-minute version of Whipping Post.